Once a perpendicular, dark shade, 4 inches broad, appeared on my side of the canvas, close to its edge. This remained for 25 minutes, and disappeared. Once we thought the picture was beginning to form, but this appearance faded away. Both psychics, independently, saw my guide, and described her posing for her picture. Lizzie Bangs described her clairvoyant vision when May was out of the room, and afterwards May told me what she saw, without collusion with her sister. I had arranged with my guide, in Detroit, by direct voice, how the picture was to be, and it was thus the sisters described her. Eventually the picture itself proved the correctness of the clairvoyance of both sisters. One particular only was incorrect. Dr. Sharp, Mrs. Rhett's control, appeared on the mottling canvas just as he appears in his portrait, smiling. At 2.50 came the message, "You are too intent. The magnetism is used up for the day. Come tomorrow." Q. Is it necessary to leave the canvases here? A. It would be better, but it would not satisfy your test. I accordingly packed up the canvases, and took them off to my hotel, 3 miles off, where they were locked up. The second day, Sunday, January 29, 1911, I arrived with my 2 canvases a little before 4 p.m., and we assembled for the seance at 4.15. I put the canvases up as before, and asked Lizzie Bangs to pinch them together on her side, while I did the same on mine. May Bangs sat opposite the canvases, in the visitor's chair, as on the previous occasion. The doors were thrown open, and ceilings of the window examined. Soon after the canvases were set up, the next began mottling on the inside, as it did the day before. This time, not only did the face of my guide's father appear for a short time, but that of my father. May Bangs, as before, left her seat several times and moved about the house. She appeared to be absolutely unable to sit still. About 5 p.m. we were told that we were too intent, and that we were to get up from our chairs and move about the house to change vibrations. I did not leave the room, and never lost sight of the canvases. Between 5.5 and 5.55 p.m. I smoked a cigar, sitting at first in the visitor's chair, 2.5 feet from the canvases. Lizzie Bangs came to her seat about 5.20, and I resumed mine, both of us pinching the canvases. At about 5.45 May Bangs was sent for to take her proper seat, and I took the visitor's seat. Even then she could not keep still. Some of the delay was owing to a blunder of mine. It had been arranged at Detroit that Iola was to put round her neck a chain with locket, and that I was to put my watch on the table close to the canvases, in order that the invisible artists might extract the gold from it. This I had done the previous day, but today, at 5.30, it suddenly occurred to me that I had forgotten about my watch. I then put it down on the table. The changes in the canvas first showed by a rose-tinted light at the bottom, after the faces had appeared on the white mottling. About 5.15 p.m. a black patch appeared right in the middle of the canvas, and increased in size and darkness. This is the opposite to what usually happens in the precipitations under ordinary circumstances. The dark shade begins at the edges of the canvas. Lizzie Bangs and I watched this black shade growing till 6 p.m., when it was dark outside, and we were told to light the room up. To my dismay, the canvas appeared blank. We asked, "Shall we light the globe?" A wandering lead, answer, "Not yet." A few minutes later the message came to hang the globe behind the canvases. I did this myself. We were soon, all three, in our places. I was told to take up my watch with one hand, and pinch the canvases with the other. At 6.5 the picture began. The face and form were finished, as they are now, by 6.20, but there was a smudge on the neck, and the top of the canvas was very badly rubbed. The background was unfinished. I remarked on this. The message came, "Cover the picture, put out the lights, and come back later." We covered the picture, put out the lights, and all went downstairs to tea, after I had examined my labels on the window sashes. In an hour we returned, switched on the lights, uncovered the picture, and found the defects entirely removed. The background was evidently improved, but not finished. I was told to take away the picture, and the background would be finished in the hotel, or on the passage home, it would be mottled. I departed with both the canvases under my arm. The next time I saw the picture was in London, on March 9th, and found that the background was mottled. A graphophone played while the sitting was going on. Mrs. Bangs and two dogs strayed in and out of the room. On both days everything was of the most casual description. The messages came sometimes by impression through one of the sisters, but more often by taps on a slate. I obtained good evidence that all these messages were true communications from the other side. As I was leaving the house, in order to coax the sisters into a genial frame of mind for the letter test which was to take place next morning, I put into their hands a pamphlet issued by the Society for Psychical Research, London, in January, 1901, describing them as cheats and impostors of the first order. I never did believe this account, and, after hearing the evidence of a certain gentleman in Chicago who knew the writer well, I am now certain the whole story is the outcome of the latter's excited imagination. 100. My readers will forgive me for not disclosing the measurements and other particulars of the Bangs sisters' séance room, or the nature of the chemical I took from England to prove that the ink used in the reply letter was the same ink as I put on or near the slates. I have good reasons for not doing so, in view of the statements made in an article published in the Annals of Psychical Science, June to September, 1910. On Monday, January 30, I bought two hinged school slates and six broad India rubber bands. The ink to be put on the table had been purchased in England, also a chemical that would speedily and effectively prove whether the ink with which the reply letter was written was my ink or not. I took with me a short letter, written in England, which contained one question. Two blank sheets were enclosed for reply. All these were placed in one envelope, sealed in such a manner as to defy its being opened without detection. Thus equipped, and carrying some flowers, I attended the Bangs house at the appointed time, 11 a.m. Lizzie Bangs did not appear till 11:45, when we sat. I had moved the table close up against the center of the west wall. I placed May Bangs on the north side of the table, with directions not to move her chair close up to it, and requested Lizzie to sit in a chair in the southeast corner of the room, and some 4 to 5 feet from me. I sat, with my back to the light, on the south side of the table, with my left shoulder against the west door. From this position I could see the hall and door into May Bang's house, for I threw open the north door of the séance room, and also the east door, that which leads into Lizzie Bang's house, which is the alleged object of suspicion. My letter was put between the slates, and Lizzie Bangs held one corner while I stretched three rubber bands around them lengthways and three crossways. Then I laid them on the table, a little my side of the center, put a small pot in the center of the top, filled it more than half full with my ink, and surrounded it with a black cloth, stretching to the edge of the slates. Everything was as casual as possible. Mrs. Bangs, the mother, wandered in and out of the room. Occasionally a dog or two would pass through. May Bangs frequently left her chair and the room. Lizzie left her chair only, at my request, to wind up the graphophone, which played nearly the whole time. If May Bangs drew her chair up to the table, she was put back. From first to last May Bangs did not touch the slates or the little ink pot. The parent bottle of ink was in my pocket. Conversation was going on all the time. We talked principally of the SPI report that I had given to the sisters the previous night. Lizzie Bangs had, I think, heard of it, because she told me amusing stories of its author. May had not heard of it, she never reads anything. Certainly the author had not sent them a copy of the pamphlet, which was published in England. Imagine the conditions, table shifted to a part of the room to which it was a stranger, the psychic, who functions alone in the phenomenon of writing within sealed envelopes at the usual sittings for this purpose, placed with her face towards the southern light streaming into the room, both women seething with indignation at cowardly attacks published in England, the suspected door wide open, the door into the hall wide open, and Lizzie, the person who, it is alleged, hides behind the suspected door and writes the replies, in the room. Lizzie said to me, "You have no idea how this sudden and complete upset of our usual conditions affects us. We have no objection to a gradual altering of our accustomed habits. For instance, investigators may come and take us first day as we usually sit. In the case of this phenomenon, I should not be here, but doing other work. On the second day a slight alteration would be made, at the suggestion of the investigators. On the third day another item would be changed, on the fourth another, and so on, until every phase of our usual conditions was altered. But to come suddenly upon us and change all our conditions in one day is more than any sensitive can stand. The strain is too great. If you had not told me of these slanders, I assure you I would never have consented to your demands. We will never do it again for anyone." To this I replied I knew I should not be able to get this test unless I gave you sound reasons for it. You are suspected of sitting, or crouching, behind that door, pointing to it, listening, and answering the letters passed out to you by your sister. I know it is untrue, and, moreover, impossible, as I examined this room in 1909, and again a few days ago, the thing cannot be done. But we must finish this test. I cannot spend more than a day or two here. I have confidence that we shall succeed. It is a fact that all through this troublesome work I felt a certainty of success. Perhaps this feeling was partly due to the recollection of my work with these true psychics in 1909. At 12:20 the sisters went down to dinner separately, some food being brought to me in the séance room, where I sat, controlling the slates. The spirits encouraged my smoking on every occasion, and I must have got through a good many cigars. At 1:20 we sat again in the same seats, May Bangs as restless as ever, seldom remaining in her chair for more than a few minutes. At 2:15 message came, "You are too intent, it would be better to postpone the sitting till tomorrow." Question: how are you getting on? Answer: slow, but sure. I packed up my slates in paper, tied them up with a cord, and took them back to my hotel, where they were locked up. The little pot was emptied and washed out by me. On future days the slates were not removed from the paper, except on one occasion, and the small pot was not used. My traveling bottle of ink was unscrewed, and the cork taken out. Second day, Tuesday, January 31st. We sat under precisely the same conditions as before. From 11 to 12:05. Once May Bangs demanded to see the letter, saying, "How do I know if anything is within the slates?" The slates were then opened by myself, the sisters not touching them, and when May Bangs was satisfied by seeing the letter, I put the rubber bands on as before, and tied the slates up in paper. As usual, the graphophone was played, and the two doors were wide open. May Bangs again complained, "These conditions are all wrong, we cannot go on like this, I ought to touch the slates." I answered, "Very well, you shall, if the controls advise us to let you do so. Hold this plate, one belonging to the Bangs sisters, I will take the other end." We took the Bangs slate between us. Vigorous rapping was heard, and the sisters interpreted, "It is not necessary." With this the psychic was satisfied. At 12:05 we were told again that we were too intent, no writing had been accomplished, but the slates were being surrounded with the necessary magnetism. We were to walk about and change vibrations. As May Bangs had important legal business in the city, and Lizzie had many letters to write, we separated till 7 p.m., I, of course, taking my slates and ink to my hotel. I found diversion in some business matter I had to attend to in town. At 7 p.m. we sat again. I arrived a few minutes before, and questioned May Bangs as to her little outing, inquiring specially if she had derived any benefit from the fresh air. Then out came a story of incredible folly. After I had left the house, a man, evidently in distress, was let in, and implored May Bangs to give him a sitting for a letter. She refused him twice, having her business in view, but as he was turning away from the door, with obvious keen disappointment in his face, she relented. One letter answered, she functioned for another. Then it was too late to do her business in town. A second man came in, and she sat for him also. I was indignant. Both the sisters admitted the mistake, May Bangs saying, "Well, Mr. Moore. I know it was wrong, but when I saw tears in that man's eyes I couldn't help it, and that is all there is about it. My slates, wrapped in paper, were placed in the usual position on the table, my hand upon them. In a minute or two we were told that the power of the psychic had been exhausted during the afternoon, and that it was no good sitting. No writing had yet been done, but progress had been made during the day in surrounding the slates with the necessary force to meet the altered conditions. For the third time I walked off with my slates and ink. Third day, Wednesday, February 1, 1911. We met in the séance room at 11 a.m. I was told that friends were coming about noon, but we hoped the reply to my letter would be finished before that. Conditions as before, doors thrown open, graphophone playing, and both psychics present. May Bangs somewhat less restless. At 11:55, no signal having been given to open the slates, I asked, when the visitors come, may they sit with us? Answer, we cannot tell till they are in the room, they are now outside. Immediately there was a ring at the front door, and Mrs. Bangs let in a gentleman and a lady. The Bangs sisters went out to meet them, and I followed, after picking up my slates and ink. There was an interval of half an hour, during which time we all five talked in Lizzie Bangs' drawing room. The lady Vithrita told me they had phoned for a sitting on the previous afternoon. Both she and her husband would gladly assist me and wait for their own business. We all sat round the séance table, and I again put my slates and ink on top of it in the same position as before, with one hand upon them. The chemical I had brought from England remained throughout all the sittings in the left pocket of my coat. At 12:40 Lizzie Bangs went down to dinner, and the restless May sat part of the time with the visitors and myself around the séance table, and then went to her meal, or walked about the house. I smoked and chatted with the visitors, who, I found, were both mediumistic. A little after 1 p.m. the party of five assembled round the table. At 1:20 Maybangs said excitedly, if this thing does not come off now, I refuse to sit again, I feel as if I was being torn to pieces. A message came, the visitors are to go into the front parlor, the psychics and you, that was me, into the back drawing room, which is to be darkened. You are to take your slates and ink with you. No need to tell me that. Accordingly, the visitors departed to the front parlor, and the Bangs sisters went with me into the neighboring room. This room was darkened with the shutters, but there was enough light left for me to see the white paper in which the slates were tied up, in front of me, with one of my hands on them. The open bottle of ink was at my left elbow, Lizzie Bangs about 2 feet to my left, May in an easy chair some 6 or 7 feet away. After 5 minutes Lizzie and I saw lights, from the size of half a dollar to that of a dollar, come and go round and behind the head of May Bangs. Later a faint ethereal form rose behind her. I was not able to see what this phantom did to the psychic, but it remained a few minutes, and at 1:45 she said she felt much better. We were told to separate and divert ourselves, but not to assemble in the séance room for an hour. I screwed up my ink bottle, took my slates, and entered into conversation with the gentleman in the front parlor, who diverted my attention by relating to me a most interesting story of his conversion to spiritualism. Lizzie Bang's attention was taken off from the test by entertaining the lady in her own drawing room, and May Bangs wandered about here and there. At 3:05 all five assembled round the séance table. I laid the slates down and opened my ink, till then in my pocket. About 3:10 the message came. We are making his chemical to work in the opposite way to what he intends. At 3:20 came the welcome order to open the slates. I removed the paper cover, took off the rubber bands, and opened the hinged slates. The letter had not been tampered with. I cut it open, and observed that on the second sheet, that is, the first intended for a reply, a portion in the center of the first page looked as if it had some sort of scratchy writing on it. It looked different from what it did when I had put it in at home. I was directed to try my chemical on the blank one-third of the page on which the question was written, and I also applied it to the one-third of a page of the suspicious-looking second sheet. When the first was dry, we found the following, in very faint characters, like milk writing, but quite unmistakable when heat was applied. Let this prove to you my presence here today, Iola. When we had made ourselves quite sure of this writing, I examined the second sheet, and found a private message of 4 lines, in deep black characters. The writing being similar to that generally in evidence in all the Bang sisters' reply letters. When I applied the chemical on it, I had already applied it under it. The test showed it was written with my ink. There was no reply to the question in my letter. The slates, ink, and chemical were under my control entirely throughout the 3 days of the experiment. The last duty was to examine the houses, and to sit close to the alleged incriminating door, on the outside, and try if I could hear conversation in the séance room. The visitors and one of the Bang's sisters talked in the middle of the séance room. I found it easy to detect that they were conversing in ordinary voices, but I only made out 2 words in a conversation of 4 or 5 minutes duration. So ended a trying ordeal of 5 days. Both sisters were much exhausted. May Bangs could hardly stand, and Lizzie, though calm, had evidently reached the limits of endurance. I was considerably depleted, and left for the East the next morning. It is necessary for me to deal with the following statements in the article in the Annals of Psychical Science, already referred to, -1, that there is a white slit in a door, p. 449. There is no slit in any door, nor was there in 1909. 2. I afterwards discovered several tiny pinholes in the strip of wood dividing the windows, p. 452. There is only one window. If the author means sashes, there is no strip of wood in sight dividing the sashes. There is, however, something else which he has failed to notice, but nothing suspicious. It is the same now as in 1909. At the present juncture it would be unwise to give away more about the room. But I must state this as my conviction: either the author of that article has never been inside the Bang's house, or he is incapable of making ordinary observations with accuracy. The attack on these psychics, without sending them a copy, and in an English magazine which he knew they would not see, is an act that requires no comment from me. It may be left with safety to the judgment of my readers. On my way down to the coast from Detroit, I called at Rochester, and saw Mrs. Georgia in hospital. Lying on her back, she kindly wrote for me. The mirror writing occupied 7 pages in 3 interviews, and proved to be from Iola and Catherine. My guide referred to the subject of her script of 2 years before, and Catherine, so often alluded to in previous pages, called herself by the pet name she was known by, in my family, when alive. I am happy to say that the effort did not do any harm to the convalescent, but she has not, according to latest accounts, obtained phenomena since I left. There seems but little doubt that, as her health and buoyant spirits return, she will regain her gift of mediumship, and exercise it for the benefit of her mother and intimate friends. 101. The last experience I had before leaving America was with Mr. P. 0. Keeler, the well-known medium for slate writing, who lives at 1362 Parkwood Street, Washington, D.C. He was, at that time, paying a visit to Brooklyn. The interview was on Friday, February 24, 1911, 3 to 4 p.m. The window near which the table was placed has a western aspect. The sun streamed in and flooded the table and room with light. We sat opposite to one another at a small table 2 feet broad. After cleaning the slates together, Keeler asked me to take a pad off the table, tear off slips, and write the names of spirits on 5 or 6 of the papers. Each little slip was to be folded up in any way I thought best, and the names were to be written as I would address the person in earth life. I rose from the table, turned my back to the medium, and wrote 7 names, 5 of women, 2 of men, 2 of the pellets contained the name of one spirit, my guide, one giving her earth name and the other her spirit name, Iola. Only 6 individuals, therefore, were indicated. These pellets I laid in a heap on the center of the table. Keeler said, nothing will happen for a quarter of an hour or so, as the spirits have to be summoned. After an interval of 10 minutes, he touched the outside of each pellet with the tip of his finger, but did not handle them nor draw them closer to his side of the table. 5 minutes or more passed, and he seemed worried that nothing happened, and became restless and jerky. It must have been 25 minutes from the time I had put the pellets on the table when he was impressed to say, "Add the names of one or two gentlemen." They say that, among these names, there is more than the right proportion of ladies. Following my invariable custom of not purposely deceiving a medium, I had already told Keeler that two of the pellets contained names of the same individual, my guide. I added that, as I had talked with her in the morning, I had reason to believe that she was present, which I have since heard she was. In my lap, as I sat facing the medium, out of his view, I wrote the names of two men, and added these pellets to the others on the table. Before doing this, I had drawn the heap of pellets closer to me than they were to the medium. Keeler did not have his hands on the table while I wrote the two extra names. Soon after this, the medium warned me that, when the slate writing began, it would go on continuously and rapidly. He touched the new pellets with the tip of his finger, and after a few minutes was impressed to write a name on a spare slate. He said, "What is this?" I looked, and saw the name of my brother, Alden. Then, one after another, he wrote six names on this slate. Each name he wrote I had to search for among the pellets, which I did in my lap, where it was impossible for him to see the writing. When made up again, each pellet that had been opened and reclosed was put upon a pair of slates, kept ready for the purpose between us, with a bit of slate pencil inside, and these were not fingered in any way by the medium. In time, six pellets, containing the names of six individuals, were collected on top of the pair of slates. We had sat for about 40 minutes, when Keeler suddenly lifted the pair of slates with one hand at each of the two corners nearest to him, thumbs on top and fingers below, and gave me the other end to hold, which I did in like manner, pinching the two slates together. The writing began immediately, and could be heard plainly. There was no downward pressure while it was going on. As soon as he was impressed that one slate was full, the medium put it down on his right without looking at it, picked up another, placed on it a bit of slate pencil, covered it with the original top slate upon which the pellets were lying, and gave me the other end to hold. The writing again was heard proceeding very rapidly. Precisely the same happened to this slate. A third was taken up, and so on, until five slates were covered with writing by eight individuals. The medium was then impressed to write the word "all" on a spare slate. He told me this meant that the seance was over. The following points must be noted. One spirit manifested who was not named at all. It was the son of the gentleman who had made the appointment for me the previous afternoon. One spirit manifested whose name was in a pellet on the table, but not on the slates. One slate, full of close script, had two letters on it at right angles to one another in different hand soft hyphen writings. When one of these was finished, Keeler was impressed to move the slate to a rectangular position. We seized the slates at opposite corners, my left hand being where his right had been, and so on. The letters on the slates are very close together. One slate had a letter from my sister Catherine. In the upper left-hand corner there was a carefully finished picture of a man's head and shoulders, and underneath it the drawing of a forget-me-not. I do not recognize the man's face. One letter had two signatures, viz., the earth name and spirit name of my guide. In a postscript was an allusion to our meeting in the morning. The names given in the signatures were all correct, except one. This I had written as Miss Bowman. The signature was Mary Bowman. The Christian name of the lady was not Mary. This note was on the same slate as that which contained a letter from my brother-in-law, who lived in the same house with her for some years. All the letters were very commonplace. I attach them below. There are no proofs of identity in any of them. I am certain that my guide did not write the letter over her signature. The work was unquestionably that of invisible and intelligent beings who heard the conversation, read the names and short sentences inside the pellets, and wrote the replies. We held the slates about 9 inches above the table. Keeler's hands never moved when holding them. Throughout the whole hour the psychic only rose from his chair once, to pull the blind down a foot, to shade our eyes from the glare of the western sun. In all, the slate writing contained 474 words written, and two pictures drawn, in a period not exceeding 10 minutes. including the 4 delays necessary for taking up a new slate. I have seen evidence of identity obtained by others in slate writing through the mediumship of Mr. P. 0. Keeler, but the only signs I got were the letters of Henry Usman and Miss Bowman on the same slate.